The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Another sport, another game, a very important game, of course, for the listeners of Bloomberg Radio, and that is the markets. And if you're watching the markets, you've got to be watching the economy right now. The Federal Reserve is hinting that it's getting ready to taper off, and that has everyone on edge. The Fed chairman says it's data dependent. So what does Jim Bianco see now of Bianco Research? He's back to tell us. Jim, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just start with today's numbers. The personal spending number was down a couple of tenths of percent instead of being up a tenth of a percent. Not exactly a resounding report for the month of April. We had the Chicago purchasing managers, that's kind of a hodgepodge business activity number, but it had a big jump, right? And then consumer sentiment from University of Michigan jumped up. What's going on out there in your neck of the woods?
Well, I think that, you know, the big surprise of the day was the Chicago purchasing managers, and that's a bit of an outlier because it did have its biggest jump in 30 years today. And, of course, 100 miles north of Chicago is Milwaukee, and it had one of its biggest dives ever, and it's at a contractionary level that has last seen in 2000.
But, Jim, can I jump in? Because the thing that people forget, I know you know, but for our listeners, most of these regional purchasing managers index are a regional measure of you know, manufacturing companies in their area. Chicago purchasing managers, they talk to U.S. companies, global companies. They talk to services. They're not just in Chicago. They're everywhere, which makes this one, I think, a little bit harder to understand and read.
I agree, because what I was going to say was the Milwaukee number was weak. The Federal Reserve does regional numbers like the Philly Fed Index and the Dallas Fed and the Empire State Manufacturing. They were all weak for the month of May or neutral. And then you get this huge outlier in Chicago. You know, it reminds me of the old Sesame Street game. One of these does not look like the other, and that Chicago does not look like all of the other regional manufacturing numbers we have. So until there's confirmation from some other regionals that suggest that there's been a huge rebound in manufacturing activity, I would take this number with a grain of salt.
Yeah, what's your sense about the manufacturing economy overall? Because we also got, you know, wages and salaries data, which showed goods producing salaries went down, manufacturing salaries went down, even though service industries went up, albeit by a tenth of a percent.
Overall, I think that the economy, I've used the metaphor that it's a C minus. You know, if your kid comes home with a C minus, no parent is happy, but you get to go to the next grade. It's not an F, it's not a recession, but certainly this economy is not good. And we're approaching the fifth year of a recovery, which will start July 1st. And this has still been a subpar recovery. Now, I know that there's a lot of people that want to look at the S&P or the Dow at new all-time highs and say, Jim, look at the numbers harder and find some good stuff in there because the market's going up. Fact of the matter is, there really isn't anything exciting out there. Most of the data is C-minus. It's kind of milquetoast. It's not bad. It's not recession, but it's certainly not good. And we just continue to stumble along.
Jim, is it bad enough for the Fed to continue to buy bonds? Is it time for the Fed to taper off regardless because it's done just about as much as it can do? And as even Fed officials say, tapering off doesn't mean they remove stimulus. It just means they stop pumping it up.
Right. You know, the Fed question is more of a philosophical question. Again, we're in the 60th month of a recovery, and the Fed has been doing quantitative easing since November 25th, 2008, in various forms, QE1, QE2, Operation Twist, QE3. And yet we still have a weak economy. So the philosophical question is, maybe this doesn't work. How many more years is the Fed going to have to go without seeing decent numbers to say, maybe what we're doing isn't accomplishing what we think it should be accomplishing, and that is boosting the economy. Now, I know the Fed will argue the counterfactual. What would it be if we hadn't done anything, and suggest that it would, you know, be some version of a Mad Max movie, the economy had the Fed not been doing QE? But David Malpass had an interesting editorial in the Wall Street Journal today saying, no, things would have been much better had the Fed not done QE starting 5 years ago.
I love that idea. A version of a Mad Max movie economically. That would be pretty dire. Jim Bianco joining us here on the Hayes Advantage. I'm Kathleen Hayes, Vonnie Quinn. He'll be back. We're going to continue our look at the Fed, the economy, and the markets.
And we want to return to our conversation now with Jim Bianco, president of Bianco Research. Jim, you were saying that, you know, you're not too optimistic. You'd give the economy a C minus. There's really nothing all that definitive to say that the economy is doing better in the 60th month of recovery. What about jobs? We have seen sort of a volatile number, but it has averaged 200,000 for the last 6 months or so. And Barclays, for one, says we really only need 100,000 jobs a month or even less than that to keep the unemployment rate at least stable.
I think it's my take is it's a little bit higher than 100,000, but I won't quibble with that number. Whenever anybody asks me about jobs, I keep thinking of that Daniel Moynihan line, defining deviancy downward. Throughout the entire 1990s, we averaged 210,000 jobs. Then, you know, during the period of 2002 to 2008, between the recessions, we averaged around 195,000 jobs. Now we get 1 month of 170,000 above consensus. We're almost to 200,000 with one huge 350,000 job number because of weather. And this used to be considered below average 10 years ago, and now we're heralding this as springtime for the job market. These numbers should be 300, 350 every month if we are really in a solid recovery.
Well, you know what, Jim, I remember those days. Back in the 90s, late 90s, right? The tech boom, and we were having the stock market throw off all kinds of extra revenues that had been anticipated, and it was helping the budget so much. But this, I think, raises a really important point for the Federal Reserve and maybe more so for the markets. And I want to get to the market implications of your views. But if we have gone through some kind of structural change, globalization, competition with low-wage countries, competition at home from technology, and now we're going to be competing with robots, maybe we can't get to those kind of growth rates for a long time without something that goes way beyond monetary policy. And that's where this frustration or this question about the Federal Reserve and what it's doing comes in, because, you know, you can pump in all liquidity you want, but if there's been a fundamental change, can it make much difference?
You hit upon probably the single most important question that doesn't get discussed enough. It gets discussed in versions of the new normal and other types of questions. The economy is perceived to have a potential GDP growth rate of 2.5%. Define potential simply. Nothing is happening. It should grow at 2.5%. No one's trying to speed it up or slow it down. We haven't had 2.5% growth now in almost 2 years in this economy, measured year over year. If what we are arguing is the economy was damaged after 2008, and I use the analogy, I'm full of metaphors, a runner that broke its leg, it's healed, but they can never run the same speed that they used to before the leg, that now it's only 2%, then if you think 15 PE on the stock market is fair value, it's now 10. You have to bring all of your valuation numbers down a third if you're going to bring down a third the potential GDP. If we're going to argue that this is a broken leg healed and we can't get back to where we were before, that we should be happy with 190 on jobs, that's a good number. We should be happy with 2% growth, that's a good number. Then 15 PE on the stock market is overvalued. 15 PE only works if we're still operating in the old environment. Now, I don't think that's the case. I still think that this economy is being held back, that it still has that potential. I would actually argue, as I mentioned before, David Malpass, I think the Fed's policy is holding it back more than anything else. But once we've unleashed this economy, we can get back to 90s kind of numbers. Maybe not those 300,000 to 400,000 jobs numbers we saw in the tech boom, but solidly 200,000 to 300,000 a month, 3%, 3.5% growth. We're not there now. We're not going to be there this year. And the problem that we have to address is why we're not there. And if you believe it is that structurally we can't get back there, then everything is overvalued, because we have to have a complete rethink on what we think valuation is if we are in some kind of new normal lower environment.
Jim, explain why you think the Fed might actually be hindering the recovery as opposed to helping it.
The largest part of the credit creation in the marketplace is what is known as the shadow banking system. It is larger than bank loans. That has been damaged from the 2008 recovery and is still not recovering. It's still contracting. One of the biggest problems the shadow banking system has, and I'm hopefully not going to get too technical here on you, is the availability of collateral. people need treasury securities and high-quality securities in order to do collateralized loans or what we know as repo. How does a hedge fund, how does a finance company borrow? They use collateralized loans, otherwise known as repo. $3 trillion of those loans are now tied up at the Fed because the Fed buys up all those securities, sucks them out of the market, and you hear a lot of people talk about the lack of high-quality collateral and that is retarding the shadow banking system. Credit is contracting faster in the shadow banking system than we've seen it grow in the traditional banking system, and so we're not getting the credit growth that everybody thinks we are. And the growth rates we've been seeing in the economy are consistent with that. If we were to unleash the shadow banking system, I think we would then have faster credit growth in the entire economy, and we see much higher GDP.
Let's take a look at the markets. Let's start with the S&P 500. We are in this range, what, around, 1660. I'm just taking another look at my Bloomberg terminal to see exactly where we are today because it has been a little bit up and down. 1652. Are we heading towards a test of support at 1,600 and below? Are we going to break above the 1,700 level that so many have said that we would, so many people have as their end of year target, and here we are just at the end of May?
I'm going to bet on 1,700, and I'm going to bet on 1,700 because I think that the Fed stimulus is the primary driver of this economy, or of the markets, not earnings, not GDP. So I'm in that camp. I'm not going to try and explain it with earnings or GDP. I'm going to explain it with the Fed. And I think that given all of these lackluster numbers, the Fed is going to continue bond buying longer than people think into the fall or winter, if not 2014, and that will be supportive of risk markets. Quick problem with that call. Yes, markets go higher. Fed keeps buying. Markets go higher. As soon as the markets whiff out a chance that the Fed is really going to stop, we kind of saw that in the last couple of weeks, the instability that we've seen. But when the market really thinks the Fed's going to stop, what we've seen in the last few weeks could be much larger. So the problem here is that you buy the market, you play it, but you got to get out before the Fed does, because once they step aside, I think we're going to
And you're talking about stocks?
I'm talking about stocks.
Are you talking about something more than a 5% correction?
The Fed has stopped twice with QE since 2008, in 2010 and 2011. In 2010, the stock market fell 17%, and then Bernanke gave his Jackson Hole speech and said, all right, there's more coming. In 2011, they stopped again. It fell 20%. Bernanke gave a Jackson Hole speech again and said Operation Twist was coming. So I have no reason to think that the last two times we stopped, we fell 17 and 20%. We stopped now. We're going to fall 17 or 20% unless the Fed wheels around after they stopped and said, no, we're going to do some more. But once they stop and they honestly say, no, that's it, we're done, I think we could be in for a very stiff correction in the market. But that is months, if not next year, off into the horizon.
Will we see something sooner in the bond market?
No, I don't think so. I think that ultimately what the bond market is suffering from is the biggest trade in the fixed income market is what we call the yen carry trade.
Uh-huh.
People are borrowing in Japan. There's a lot of volatility in Japan. That is the instability that I think we're seeing in all bond markets, especially ours. I don't think we're going to get above 230, 240 at a worst case scenario until the Fed stops with its buying. So I think that this rise in yields is about run its course. And for the big rise in yields to occur, the Fed has to first stop. And I, like I said before, I don't think they're going to stop in the next several months.
Okay, well, we can relax and have a nice summer, right, Jim?
Yeah, I think so. But, watch out for the fall.
There you go.
I like
okay.
That. What was that phrase again, Jim? Declining. It wasn't declining.
Oh, something.
But defining deviancy downward. Yes.
That's it.
Defining deviancy downward. I love it. Jim Bianco, of course, that's not you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
From Bianco Research in Chicago. Boy, so much. We always get so much of these conversations with Jim Bianco, don't we?
Yeah, I'm so interested to hear some of his thoughts. And he actually thinks the Fed is hindering the economy, echoing what David Malkpass is saying in the Wall Street Journal today.
But we get the S&P 500 to 1,700 still, because as long as they're buying, the stocks will continue to go up. He basically seemed to say a top on the 10-year note yield at 240. Vonnie Quinn and I, at Vonnie Quinn, at Kathleen_Hayes, tweeting a lot of this out and more. Keep it right here. This is Bloomberg Radio.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.